All right, hello everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of RealCom Live. I am so excited about what we're going to be talking about today. And over the course of the last 6 months, we've been talking about maybe not such happy things like COVID tech and what it's going to take to get people back into offices from a safety and a health standpoint, which is very important. But along that same conversation, intertwined has been what we're talking about as occupant experience, enhanced occupant experience, next generation occupant experience. I mean, we've all are familiar with cube farms and the drudgery of going into offices and sitting in these little cubicles all day. And over the last 5-10 years, more and more conversations have been had about what is an occupant experience. What should somebody expect when they come to the workplace, when they come to the mall? And we have got a phenomenal speaker today, Hans Neuber with Gensler. One of the best in the world on the topic. And he's going to share with us some of the things that the smartest, the most innovative people around the world, the top 1-2% are talking about as it relates to coming back to these experiences. But before we bring Hans on, we're going to run a quick video again to give you some context and set the stage for what is going to be a phenomenal conversation. All right. And with that, I'd love to bring on Hans Neuber, the global practice leader of digital experience design from Gensler.
Hi there. Jim.
How are you?
I'm very good. Thanks for having me.
Good to see you. You have no idea how much I've been looking forward to this conversation. Our journey with Gensler goes back probably 30 years. Okay. David and I long ago met at a BOMA show in Los Angeles, and we argued to the audience that they needed to bring a residential to downtown Los Angeles, and I think they threw tomatoes at us at the time. but the work you guys done, you know, around the world, I followed your journey through the Middle East, Dubai, Abu Dhabi. Gensler just seems to attract really smart people, and I'm going to add you to that list. So thank you for being here today.
Well, humbly accepted. Thank you very much for having me.
So this topic is big. It's sometimes confusing. Not everybody gets it the first time around, right? You know, visionaries who take risks and transform real estate, you know, going over the last 100 years from barns to factories and factories to office, retail, industrial that we know today. And there's a new thing coming. And it's a combination of physical space and immersive experiences and technology applications that we really haven't seen yet. So I want to take the first part of our conversation and start at the high level. Okay, what is a digital experience? Can you give us some idea at a high level what that means to you?
Sure. Well, first, you know, I let me break down digital in this case just for the purpose of clarity and answer your question. So we look at it through three territories that are really emerging and evolving together. One is the immersive side of technology, the things where technology is added into the built environment, either through media architecture or in any other way, that makes spaces in many ways more, I would say, better storytelling devices. You know, we see that heavily, of course, in museums. We used to see it in places like arrival hallways. But, you know, the truth is we see it everywhere today. We see it from stadiums to airports, mixed use, workplace, and so forth and so on. And it comes in every form, from wayfinding through entertainment, through advertising and media, right? So that's one big category that we're covering here. The second one is really around connected user experience or connected customer experience. So many different ways of sort of titling that. But the handle for us really connected experiences as a whole. And what I mean with that is that that personal technology that we carry, you know, of course, for most of us, a smartphone, but it goes into wearables, it goes into all kinds of tags and so forth, and have a direct impact on how we experience space today, right? Think about air travel 20 years ago versus today, right? How much time are we saving in essentially like carrying our device and doing all interactions through our phones, you know? And that's true for a lot of different industries, and industries have somewhat evolved separately, but as we see today is they're starting to converge, right? We see technology that used to be created for airports show up in workplace. And then finally, wherever there is technology, there's data. And the question isn't what and why data. It's more like why, what are we doing with it? And what are we deriving from it? So the third category we just simply title as intelligence, really what intelligence can we derive from bringing technology into the built environment, and how can we learn from people what they both do, where they are, how they behave, and how can we create better, more effective user experiences with architecture, with technology, improve the agility of space, et cetera. And so these are the three categories, how we define it: immersive, connected, and intelligent, just to kind of leave that in the room.
So before we get to the technology part, let's just talk about the physical part for a second. And I want to bring up an example. You mentioned airports. For those of us old enough to remember what airports were like long ago, they were places you went to get on an airplane. You were dropped off early days, you know, family, friends could take you right to the gate. You said your goodbyes and you left. A couple concessions to grab something, a magazine or a candy bar to jump on the plane. Now, if you go into successful airports, the one in Singapore being the most notable, that's a Disneyland experience. Okay, there's retail, there's experiences, there's entertainment, there's, you know, departure gates. Tell us a little bit about how that airport evolved to that point.
Yeah, well, I think there are, of course, there's outside in and inside out in this case, evolutions. You know, we've obviously had major changes in airport design post September 11th. So we know security has had a major impact on how much time we spend at airports. You know, if you ask me today, I still really prefer to go from curb to seat in 20 minutes if I could, but you know, that's not really an option at the moment, unless perhaps you fly, you know, private or first class. So I think, what are we doing with this extra time? So there's certainly one, right? It's sort of the external factors that exist, pandemic being the next one you really do consider. And really, and that's a constant that evolves the way that not just airports, but really every space has to be re-evaluated and redesigned year over year, or at least in the right timeframes. Second though, is also that you mentioned, you know, Barnes, and then you mentioned mixed use. I want to say, like, we're sort of now fairly established living in an era where experience is something that is a major driver for pretty much everything that we design, you know. And I can certainly, like, you know, dive into the nuances of experience, but I think as a whole, humanity has really looked at, you know, purpose, context, personalization, health, trust, mobility, services, and so forth as a way to judge what actually spaces are offering in terms of how we kill time.
Right. And we had talked about the people that you deal with are the 1 to 2% of the people who are truly innovative, leading the charge for innovation. What do you say to the 98% who expect the world to go back to those offices that were pre-pandemic, okay, that had very little experience? I mean, hundreds, thousands, millions of buildings around the world that offer a singular function of going and sitting at a desk. What do you say to those folks about taking experience and integrating them into those very old, stoic, in some cases, boring environments?
Well, I think it's a good point. I think that every building, every owner, and every tenant has unique and personal needs, right? Like a technology company has different needs than, let's say, a bakery, or I'm talking about large scale bakery, sure. Right? And so we need to recognize that that's one input. And the second input, though, I will tell developers and brands and companies in general, is that your customers and the people who work for you, their experience is influenced not by what you provide or what others like you provide, but everything that they experience with everybody else. The way that they are able to order an Uber, the way that an airport improves security, the way that workplace has perhaps a workplace app to, you know, reserve a seat, the way that you know, I can order a beer at a new stadium to my seat right now. All those little experiences and the way that they're supported they become your customer's expectation set, right? Yeah. And so that's what we need to look for. And as it relates to the direct impact on the repositioning, I think that the building itself is actually fairly, not easy, but technology is has the beauty of flexibility, and it can be built into almost any environment to support that very experience or user experience to improve.
Well, I 3,000% agree with you. And let's say a major corporation does a little analysis and determines that going on vacations once a year is a big deal for an employee, right? So why wouldn't that corporation push, partner, collaborate with, say, somebody like an Expedia to create an experience room, a travel experience room, not a big room, inside that corporate headquarters. So when employees are getting ready to go on vacation, they don't go up to their laptops and do the thing we all do and trying to find the photos of the resorts, but they could work with a virtual concierge from Expedia who could take them and into an immersive environment and show them resorts in 3D and take them under the water in the Caribbean. Are you seeing people ready to have those conversations and provide those kinds of solutions?
Certainly, I mean, in not this exact example, I would say. I think that there's always a, what problem are we solving and where is the true sort of gap in terms of solving it better, right? People book vacations exceptionally well by going on Instagram, looking at the latest photographs of their friends and searching out the locations. In fact, it's a problem on Instagram that there are too many pinpoints all over the world and people go to places that were previously reserved and private, and now they're being mopped by tourists. So I think that this example is a good example in general how technology might sort of evolve. The particulars of travel, I think, are less of a problem. I think we have a good inspiration there already, and I think lots of imagination and desire. The truth is, though, that personal presence, is something that we all struggle with, right? I say that here because we're all on this phone, on the Zoom call, and I think the conversation between us would probably be a whole lot better if we were in the same room. And so much of technology, I think there the effort that we're trying to do is not to make it more present, but to actually make it less visible, right? And so
more natural.
More natural, create less of a barrier and have it kind of recede into the background. And that's true for everything, right? And so the more we can both initiate and complete tasks in the same room, the more technology will help us do this more immersively and more interestingly. Travel, like I said, is one of those things. For travel to come to life, you still need to go to the location.
You and I will have a beer someday and argue about that, because I love to travel. And, yeah. And I have had to stitch together so many different platforms, Google Earth, immersive experiences, to really get a sense of what that place feels like. And inevitably, at least a few times out of 10, when I get there, I'm disappointed. So let's take a break and hear from one of our sponsors. And when we come back, we're going to talk about some specific technologies and some specific projects that Hans has been working on. All right. Thanks to BrainBox AI for that great video. All right. Let's bring Hans back. And I've got a couple questions for him. All right. So 20 years ago, the year is 2001, RealCom General Session, we actually teleported a individual onto our general session stage using a technology provided by our company called Teleportic. The gentleman was in London. We used angled plexiglass to create the illusion. These guys, I think, were ex-Disney engineers. And I said, at this point, I would like to introduce Malcolm McComb. And I went like this, and he showed up. Everybody gasped. And this was 20 years ago, okay? And honest to goodness, when you see a photo of me and him standing on the general session stage, he looks more real, more natural, more healthy than I. In the news this week that Howard's going to talk about, WeWork just signed a deal with AHRT, I believe, to bring Teleportic-like technologies to WeWork, 20 locations, I believe, worldwide. Can we talk first about some of the technologies that you see out there that will create these immersive experiences? And then before we're done, I'd like to maybe talk about a project or two.
Sure. Well, I will admit I'm still a huge fan of the real world, and I'm a huge fan of of synchronicity of technology with the real world, because I feel like it just is a general and true human is it, it the comfort for as a genuine true human being is sort of like bigger when things fairly like blend together, right? Yeah, and so more technology doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to take away the need to have the real world still present. That said, I wanted to bring up a few technologies since you're asking. So I certainly think like VR has come a long way. Like years ago, VR has struggled with both hardware and software issues. And I think in the last few years, whether it's Oculus or others, I think the quality has come tremendously better. Whether it is, you know, gaming software, or lately my favorite is workout software on Oculus, right? Mm. So the ability to, you know, the lightness of the device, the materiality of the device, the screens, the screen quality, sound, all of it comes together. And so when you ask me about really immersive personal environments, VR headset offer probably the greatest return or the greatest value on that. Of course, you gave a very different example. I mean, let's say another example that I'm excited about is Igloo. Igloo is a, you know, 360 presentation environment that allows us to, and which we're using actively on projects, allows us actively to really create full 3D walkthroughs using Unity as a piece of software, and literally creating almost game-like environments of the worlds that we are designing and creating for our clients. Again, a software or a hardware software play that for us is extremely useful, and that I see opportunity both for workplace as it relates to conference rooms, but really even like as pop-up for many other uses, whether it is, you know, gaming at a stadium or even at an airport, etc. Right? Oops, I lost you, Jim. Are you still there? You guys left me alone. I apologize to everybody. We lost Jim. Okay. So those are two. There you go. Got you back.
No explanation as to why that happened. None. So, I'm sorry.
So, for me, those are the two, you know, very immersive technologies that play themselves out that way. I could easily see, Jim, a level of conference technology that takes advantage of the type of technology Igloo developed and create entire large conference centers like this. So a place like what you described is now so immersive that you feel like you're in the equivalent of an interactive IMAX theater, right? And you have the ability to truly teleport yourself into more than just having another person present.
I think we're probably gonna see the traditional conference room morph pretty quickly over the next 12 to 18 months. I don't want to run out of time, and I could talk to you for hours, but I'm trying to pick my questions carefully. There are only a few people in the world or a few projects that are really at the cutting edge of some of this. Like I mentioned earlier, Abu Dhabi, Dubai, Singapore, we've seen some crazy things from around the world. Can you give us an idea of one project that you think is at the cutting edge of some interesting ideas in this next generation experience?
Some projects we do or do not work on, I will say, because if I'm setting cutting edge, then it isn't live or out there. You know, I will say two things. One is just finished, and another one that we may or may not work on, but that I feel like is probably worth a look. One is in Dallas, AT&T's new Discovery District. And I say that for multiple reasons. One, because it is a repositioning. And you and I talked offline how I believe, and we believe really at Gensler, that repositioning buildings has to be a huge effort going forward if we want collectively to reach the climate goals that we ought to have, both as an industry and really as a country and really as a world. And this is the repositioning of AT&T's corporate plaza into an open, first of all, for the buildings, the corporate headquarters, but really also for the public plaza, going from a corporate plaza to really opening up into a fully immersive entertainment center that has both F&B, fully immersive theater experiences. It has outdoor experiences. It was given by AT&T to Dallas and is in the process of completely reshaping the downtown area of Dallas, for those who are on the call. I can only highly recommend to go there. And it is, you know, without pictures, hard to describe, but it is a space that, in my opinion, is interesting because it is like a Swiss Army knife. It can essentially turn itself from a singular experience to something that is completely inclusive, that can go from an ambient experience with just a little bit of sound and potentially some background material to turning itself into a full concert venue, right? And then disappearing again. I say that because traditionally, when it comes to experience design, in the past, purpose was always very much visible in the implicit form factor. Right, you mentioned Barnes. Well, Barnes looked like what they were supposed to do. Today, in the age of experience design, I do feel like spaces have a greater level of agility, and that agility leads to a completely different form factor, where the form factor itself doesn't give away anything anymore, or at least not as much.
Right? The technology and the design allows it to be flexible.
Precisely, not just the technology on the digital side, but also the technology on the build side. To be really, really, it's really, really important on this, right? The ability to shape shift architecture is going to be a big part of that. And so, the AT&T Discovery Plaza, I would definitely like mention there. And if anybody is close to do Google, you can easily find out more.
So, the second. I'm going to give my age out a little bit, but that plaza. With all this ideas and my inspiration came from the 1964 World's Fair. And if you do a little homework, where all these major companies had their visions of the future, their carousels of the future, General Electric, all these, the big industrial company. From there, I jumped to Epcot, which we were talking about earlier. Would you come back on the show and let's dig deep into this AT&T Plaza? Because seeing is believing, seeing is understanding. And I think if we dissect that project, the viewers would get a real good understanding of what we're talking about.
Well, so I want to let it get away, though, the second part, which in my opinion is almost more important. And that is that the true innovation for the future, I think, does not happen, in my opinion, yet in the US, right? It happens in places like Singapore, Barcelona, Middle East. NEOM is an example. You know, lots have been written about NEOM. I understand, and I agree that NEOM is something that seems so out there that it's hard to believe that it might in fact be getting it built. But I think without real vision and real big vision, we're not going to reel in the present.
Let's make that the topic of our next step.
I'd love to do that.
And let's go around the world, show some projects, because I'm 1,000% in agreement. I've been to Singapore. The innovation that takes place in that little city, state, country, it is insane. The Middle East, as you mentioned. So unfortunately, we're out of time, but can we get you back in the future and we'll dig into some of those projects and show people
anytime.
What we're talking about? Awesome.
Anytime.
Hans, thank you so much for, I know how busy you are and high profile projects you're working on. So thank you for coming on. And I'm definitely looking forward to our next conversation.
Likewise. Thanks, Jim. Have a good weekend,
day.
Everybody.
Be well. Boy, we just ran out of time. I knew that was going to happen. It happens every week, but on this topic particularly, we could base months and months of episodes just on this topic. So with that, I'd like to bring in Howard Berger. There you are, Howard. I apologize. We ran over a little bit. Take your time. We can go over a few minutes, but tell us what's happening this week.
I will, Jim. And thanks, Jim. And thanks, Hans. Great conversation. So as we do every week, we highlight a couple of the stories from this week's weekly news briefing that released every Thursday at 11 a.m. And our lead article this week is a recap of a couple of RealCom webinars that we had on cybersecurity, both for commercial and corporate real estate, moderated by Charles Myers, who's the executive director of the RECC, the Real Estate Cybersecurity Consortium. And these particular webinars focused on cyber as it relates to both IT and OT, information and operational technologies, and how managers can help these very two different worlds come together to address their collective challenges, and that is real estate cybersecurity. Now that OT also encompasses the world of IoT, Internet of Things, the security challenges further highlight the importance of collaboration between IT and OT. And to that end, the RECC has created a space for industry professionals to come together, learn from each other, raise the knowledge level and readiness of the commercial, corporate, real estate industry at large. So great article. Thank you, Charles. Next, I just want to shout out to this week's technology partner, iOffice. And in this article, Tiffany Rivers, VP Marketing for iOffice, explores how CRE leaders can embrace the new hybrid workplace using some things like home hub and spoke model, flexible seating strategies, just the right mix of workplace technologies, including that's the software and the mobile apps like desk booking, visitor management, wayfinding, and the like, as well as sensor technologies for occupancy and utilization, with all those inputs feeding into a data-driven approach for optimizing these this hybrid model. So I want to thank you, Tiffany and iOffice, for that. Also in the news, so much like what's going on in California, there's been a lot of data privacy activity in New York lately. New York City Council recently passed the Tenant Data Privacy Act, TDPA, which now requiring landlords with smart access devices to use technology like RF, biometrics, mobile apps, et cetera, for authentication to have safeguards and policies around the tenant info. So landlords now need to have plain language policies detailing the data elements they collect, how they're used, stored, and protected. They'll also need to get express consent from the tenant before they can use any of it for authentication. TDPA will now also give tenants the right to take action and seek compensatory damages if their data is unlawfully sold. So if approved by the mayor, the TDPA will take effect in June 2021. Then finally, as Jim mentioned and Jim and Hannah had mentioned in the conversation, so looking to move beyond just the simple Zoom and team calls, early this week, Art Media out of Toronto announced a partnership with WeWork to bring holographic presentation technology initially to 16 and eventually up to 100 co-working spaces around the globe. Now, at some of these locations, you're going to be able to beam someone's holographic twin so they can appear live on some specially constructed displays at the receiving end. You know, it could be a studio, could be a concert, could be a RealCom conference. No details yet on costs or service fees, but good to see that WeWork is still out there experimenting with new, interesting, immersive, experiential technologies. Way to go. Yeah.
And we're gonna continue this conversation on immersive experiences. And a little pat on our shoulders. 20 years ago, 2001, we did immersive, teleportation on our general session stage. So in some cases, this technology isn't new. It's just we got to get it out, dust it off, get it improved, so it delivers what we want it to.
Yeah, well, I'm just glad that we're having the conversations about really starting to drive these technologies. More people are open to it. It's getting more press. I think we're hitting an inflection point.
I do too. All right. Yep. Well, Howard, thanks again to you and the team for a great week of news, and we will see you next week.
Thanks, Jim.
All right. Let's hear from one of our sponsors, ABB, and then I'm going to come back and wrap the show and talk a little bit about next week. All right. Well, I want to say thank you. A special thanks to Hans Neubert from Gensler, and specifically Gensler. We have a 25 plus year with that organization, starting all the way back with me and David Gensler at a BOMA event in LA, all the way to the top of the Shanghai Tower under construction that they provided tours for us. And the amount of support we've gotten from that company over the years, I just want to say a special thank you. And of course, to all our sponsors and our team for putting together another great week of RealCom Live. Next week, our topic's going to take a little bit gloomier turn. We're going to talk about cybersecurity. If you have not heard about cybersecurity in the last couple of weeks, you have been in a cave. Major hacks, pipelines, healthcare systems. It's getting worse every single day, and we're going to turn serious next week. And we've got two phenomenal speakers. Billy Rios, Whitescope. Our journey in cyber started with Billy 5 years ago. One of the smartest guys I know, and then Lucian Niemeyer from the Niemeyer Group, a Trump appointee for cybersecurity and within the Navy, and an infrastructure, an insanely credentialed individual. So we are going to have a good conversation on cybersecurity next week. And with that, I say have a great day, have a great weekend, and we'll see you next week. Be well.